Blog Talk Radio.
Changing Direction with Michelle Rosenthal is sponsored by Timberline Knolls Residential Treatment Center. Want to change who you are and how you live? You've come to the right place. Welcome to Changing Direction with me, Michelle Rosenthal, where every show is all about how you can create the change you choose. On every episode, we combine scientific research, cutting-edge guests, and personal stories that highlight the challenges and successes of deliberately deciding to change the direction of your life. Now, let's start making your change possible. My guest today is, well, I have to admit, I have a personal bias here. I have known Courtney Armstrong for several years. She was on the first season of my original terrestrial radio show that was called Your Life After Trauma, and she joins me now again today on Changing Direction Radio, and you will see why I love her. It will be immediately apparent. So let me just dive into our conversation and welcome Courtney Armstrong. She is the author of the brand new, hot off the presses book, The Therapeutic Aha: Strategies for Getting Your Clients Unstuck. So if you are a clinician looking for ways to innovate your practice, let me tell you, I've read the book cover to cover. There are a slew of creative opportunities you're probably missing that Courtney nails. And on the other hand, if you are a survivor looking for how to heal, let me tell you, I read this book as a survivor too, and I was thinking the whole time, oh my God, if I had had these kind of options that I could have gone to my therapist with and said, you know what, let's try this, it would have really opened up things for me. And in my conversation with Courtney now, you will see why sometimes talk therapy doesn't work, what the limits of talk therapy are, what you really need for deep healing to occur, and also, well, here's one of my favorite things. The idea that events haunt us, but there's actually some more important reason why you're having trouble just getting over it. We're going to cover all of that in my conversation right now with Courtney Armstrong, the author of The Therapeutic Aha. Courtney, welcome to Changing Direction Radio.
Oh, thank you, Michelle. It's wonderful to be here and talk with you again.
So let me tell you, as I sat down to read The Therapeutic Aha, and you lay out so beautifully in the very beginning, just really what you're talking about, that aha moment. So before we even get into the strategies, describe for us, what is The Therapeutic Aha?
Well, it is that moment that we've all had in one way or another in our life where something suddenly clicks into place. And when we're talking about healing or therapy, what happens is that when people come to therapists, they feel stuck. They don't come to therapists or coaches because they've been able to reason their way out of something. What happens is they're saying, I know this is irrational. I know I don't need to feel this way. I know I'm getting into these crazy relationships, but I can't stop doing it. I don't know why I'm doing it, and I don't know how to stop doing it. So what they're stuck around is, what keeps pushing this button for me? What keeps driving this pattern, and how do I make it stop? And what the aha moment is when you get, oh, I know why my mind keeps doing this. Mm-hmm. And I'm not crazy. And as you and I will talk, your mind, this part of the mind that we're going to talk about learns from experience. So it learns from an emotional experience that you've had or learns from repetition. And if something seemed to have worked or helped you survive something, your mind and body are going to keep repeating that pattern until you teach it something different. The problem is that part of the mind we're talking about learns through experience. It doesn't learn through words. It doesn't learn through logical reasoning. So the aha moment is when that deeper part of your mind gets it and goes, oh, I don't need to do that anymore. I can do this. And it's like I tell people, it's like an app got downloaded in your mind a long time ago through an experience you had, and all we're doing is updating that app for the year 2015.
I love everything that you're saying, and one of the things that you bring so much into the book and it comes out of your practice is the idea of humor and being playful. And we'll get into, you know, why and how that works. But in relation to experience, I want to just read this small paragraph from the Therapeutic Aha about experience. You wrote, "The key is to create conditions that facilitate an experience that changes the implicit meaning and purpose associated with an emotional pattern. Furthermore, when you add an element of novelty, intrigue, humor, or joy to the process of learning something new, the emotional brain really lights up and synthesizes new information in a deeper, more complete way." So,
yes.
Talk about that. When we use humor, when we create an experience, why does the brain light up and synthesize so much more efficiently?
Well, the part of the mind that we're talking about, and you talk about it in your material and in your book too, so it's been called the mammalian brain, or it's like the mammalian brain and the reptilian brain, and that part of our brain can synthesize, I don't know the exact number, but it's something like 11 billion pieces of information simultaneously, and your conscious, rational mind, which is right behind your forehead, the prefrontal cortex is called, it can only process about 40 bits of information at a time. So the emotional part of our brain learns through experience. It learns through the senses. And it also, emotion causes us to learn something even quicker. That's why when you've gone through trauma, you don't have to have something repeated very often. You just need one huge emotional shocking kind of thing to happen, and your mind will sear in a learned pattern very quickly. But you can also use that to your advantage. So if we can come up with a new experience that's going to help your mind attribute a new meaning to something that you've been through, and we can make it fun and exciting, and that's emotion, that's positive emotion. So what the brain does is it highlights it. And, I mean, this can happen, you know, in negative ways, like when you have people who get addictions, it's because, oh, wow, I took that drug and it made me feel really great. And your mind goes, and it can learn it really fast. You go, yeah, go get more of that. So I'm not talking about, I don't want to create addictions here, but I just want to say what we're doing is we're changing emotion with emotion, but we're doing it with a positive spin that gets the mind to associate rewarding things with a new meaning. And if what I've learned is I've got to make, when people come to me for therapy, I want to make their experience here uplifting, hopeful, exciting. I want them to leave feeling better. And so often that's not how people have felt when they go to therapy. They think, oh, gosh, I'm going to have to dig up all this awful stuff, and I'm going to feel awful when I leave because I'm going to have to process it all again. And we don't have to do it that way. I mean, we're learning now from neuroscience and better things that we're doing in therapy that, you know, we can create the experience you want right in the session. And that's what I'm interested in, is how can we get you to what's desired? And you talk about that a lot in your book, Your Life After Trauma, how you want to intend and create your future. And when we lead your mind in that direction, it can quickly reorganize things in your brain. It can reorganize the meaning. It can reorganize patterns when you've got something more compelling than your pain for it to move toward.
That's such a terrific summary. So with that as our base, let's talk the cold hard facts about talk therapy and its limits. Because for so long, I you know my story, I was in therapy on and off for 8 solid years, steadily getting worse by the end, until I just said, oh, the heck with this, I'm not doing this anymore. It's clearly just making a mess of things. So what are the limits of talk therapy, and are we flawed if we don't succeed in that modality?
Absolutely not. In fact, I don't think it's the optimal way to treat emotional pain. You know, people don't come to therapy because they have a cognitive problem. They come because they've got an emotional or relationship problem. And so that, you know, talk therapy is basically addressing what you know consciously, what you know rationally. And that has actually been what's been promoted in our profession for the last 3 decades is cognitive behavioral therapy, because it's easy to measure and it's got its place. It's useful, but I find it's useful when you're at a mild to moderate level of distress. So when you're not, you know, when you're mildly irritated, agitated, or anxious, that stuff can work. But when you are reliving something that was horrific, and someone says, well, let's just make a list of your negative thoughts and how to talk back to them, that is not going to work. I mean, you're going to be like, look, I know this is irrational, but I feel this way, and I don't know how to make it stop. And so what we got to do is go beyond that rational talk. That's not the part of the brain where we've got the issue. The part of the brain that has the issue is the emotional brain. And here's the other part I want to add to that is it's doing what it thinks is helpful. So we've been pathologizing it. Like, I'm a big fan of calling post-traumatic stress just post-traumatic stress, not post-traumatic stress disorder, because it's what any normal mind and body does in response to something horrific, and your body is attempting to protect you. So it's not that you've got some disorder or pathology, it's that your mind hasn't been convinced that it doesn't need to turn that survival response off. And the only way it's going to learn it is if you and I collaborate to figure out, well, what can we do to help that part of your mind get that's finished. You not only survived it, but conquered it. Because you survived it, it's victory. We want to get your mind feeling more secure in its ability to protect you in the environment without having to be hypervigilant, but just being secure in its ability to respond in a way that makes sense to whatever comes your way.
And really, let's talk about the difference between, I mean, I think this is a good time to highlight that part of what's going on is we have a conscious mind, like the rational mind, and then a subconscious mind. Mm-hmm. And the difference between the two and how they process information and which one's really in control, which I'll let you discuss, really changes the whole concept of talk therapy to me. Because when we realize that the conscious mind is just 12% of the brain and the subconscious is 88%, and the 12% is what we talk rational logic to in talk therapy, doesn't that sort of identify one of the other reasons talk therapy can't really help us ultimately heal all by itself?
Yeah, thank you so much. Yes, that is so true. That deeper part of your mind, your subconscious mind, which is all those things under the hood that we talk about, it is controlling most of what we're doing at any given moment. And so, you know, you're trained in hypnotherapy, and what I tell people when we're talking about hypnotherapy, it's not that mysterious, it's not about losing control, it's actually about gaining control of 100% of your mind, because all you really were thinking, the part you thought you had control over is only about 12%. So I want to teach you how to have control over all of it, not just the 12%.
Exactly. And that's what I think is so great. I'm talking with Courtney Armstrong, the author of the very brand new book, The Therapeutic Aha, 10 Strategies for Getting Your Clients Unstuck. And Courtney, what I think one of the many things, and you should see my book, I've highlighted with yellow highlights all over the place. There were so many things, I was like, oh, she's right on. One of the things that I really love is the vast and different approaches that you suggest for getting the therapeutic aha, from healing emotional wounds in terms of locating the root of the conflict, reversing trauma with memory reconsolidation, invoking inspirational imagery, conjuring up compelling stories, priming with play and humor. You even talk about rhythm, music, and poetry, and poetry had a huge part in my recovery. What I loved about this whole, it's sort of like a cauldron, and everything's boiling around it, and you're just like, well, you could just pick out any of these things to make your own soup in terms of how we individually create our healing process. Because when you were writing the book, I'm sure you were really aware, we're all so different.
Yes.
So when you look at all these different approaches that you offer in the therapeutic aha, how would you suggest somebody go about figuring out, whether it's a colleague wanting to figure out, well, which one do I use for which client, or a survivor saying, I don't know, there's so many to try, how do I know which one will work?
That's such a good question. Because I don't want people to get overwhelmed yet. I want you to determine what resonates with you, I think, is the way to, if you're reading this book as a survivor and wanting to figure out, you know, how to heal emotionally, you know, you might say, oh, well, I really love music and I'm not so great with the imagery, so I'm going to look at, you know, what she has to say about music and poetry and try that. And with therapists, I'm really big on training. I do training workshops for therapists, and what I'm really big on, more than any specific technique, is how to collaborate and read your client, and how to be more, I hate this kind of detached stance that sometimes therapists are trained to do, like you've got to stay detached. You know, people heal in relationship. So what I really like to emphasize is the attunement between you and your client is really important. And if you want to check in and make sure you understand, so even if you as a therapist love using imagery, I always ask, I say, you know, so together what we can do is think about how you want to be feeling and responding and get an image that would represent that for you. Is that something that appeals to you, or are you someone who likes music or movement? Is that more your thing? And let them lead me. And it's very, I'm very collaborative that way. We're co-creating what's going to work for you. And, you know, I know some tools, but really I want to personalize them as much as possible to what's going to be meaningful to you.
You just brought up something that's so important. And I think let's talk about this from the purely survivor perspective now, just for a moment, because I know this from my own experience as a client in the therapeutic relationship, and I know also as a coach working with clients, that as a survivor, we are feeling so threatened, so powerless, so vulnerable. I thought I was insane and certifiably crazy when I went into therapy. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of like I had no expertise whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But as a coach, I look at every single one of my clients and I say, you're the expert in you. So your voice matters, your opinion matters.
Yes.
But I think a lot of times when we enter into therapy as survivors, we really are seeing the therapeutic counselor, whoever it is that we're working with, as the authority figure. And it's very hard to feel comfortable disagreeing. Mm-hmm. So how would you suggest, from both perspectives, a negotiation so that a client feels that they can really answer somebody as honestly as they could answer you, which is, nope, therapy doesn't work. I mean, imagery doesn't work for me. It's a difficult balance there. What do you suggest?
I think you're right. Well, as a therapist, I think you've got to invite them. And what I usually say early on when I'm working with clients who've been through trauma is that part of what is so upsetting about trauma is the helplessness that people have felt. And then that's really the common denominator in who develops post-traumatic stress, is when you have that feeling of extreme helplessness. And so what I, right off the bat, like to get clear with people, in here, the whole goal is for me to help you feel empowered. And I want you to speak up. If something I'm saying isn't resonating with you, or if something I'm doing isn't really resonating with you. Now, I can say that, but they won't really believe me unless I say, I check in with them a lot. I'll say, I'll make a comment or feedback, and I'll say, am I following you, or is there something you would add or take away from what I've said, or, am I missing something? And I keep inviting them to participate that way, and they know that I'm sincere because I keep checking in. The other thing that I train therapists to do is read your client's body language, because even if they can't say it, you will see it, because what is going to happen is if the client is in agreement with you, that's really all it is agreement or disagreement. If there's agreement between two people, the body language will be a slight leaning forward, broadened facial expression. It may be subtle, but there'll be like the eyes will be wider. I mean, you'll feel it too, that there's this agreement between the both of you. If you've said something that the client isn't really in agreement with, they'll pull back just a little bit, and they'll have a look on their face that you can tell, that's not quite, I don't quite agree with that, or that's not quite what I'm thinking or feeling, or they'll look confused, or they'll, cross their arms perhaps. And what we're taught in therapy school that I hate is we were taught to say, so when you see this body language, you should say, well, I see you're crossing your arms. What does that mean? That just makes people more self-conscious. you don't say that. You just say, okay, I'm getting the sense that what I'm saying isn't quite agreeing with you. So tell me what I'm missing, and they'll tell you. And so therapists think they've got to take this expert role, but really it is a collaboration. And especially when you're working with trauma survivors, you're a compassionate guide, but really the ultimate is when you're giving them some tools and ideas and they begin to empower themselves and take charge of their own healing plan. That is so exciting.
That's from the survivor perspective, a therapeutic aha. when we start realizing, oh my gosh, I can do this. So let me ask you this. Let's just say that someone's working with a therapist and wanting to feel more comfortable voicing an objection.
Uh-huh. Okay.
What kind of language would you suggest? Like, let's just say you were coaching me, like I was working with a therapist.
Yeah.
This is not true of my therapist. He was very compassionate and easy to work with. But let's just say I was working with someone and you were a friend of mine, and I was saying, Courtney, I mean, this guy, he just doesn't, no matter what I say, he doesn't listen. He's always asking me to do stuff I don't feel comfortable doing, but I don't know how to tell him this.
Okay.
What would you suggest that I do?
Well, the first thing is, is to say to them, like, I know you're well-intentioned. I know this may have worked for some of your other clients, but it's not quite getting me there, and or help me understand. That's not really resonating with me. Help me understand what you are intending with this tool or technique, and then I might be able to tell you what would work better for me, or what words might resonate better for me. Even though I don't think we need to just rely on the words. I talk about nonverbals a lot. I mean, I invite my clients, when I give a feedback about something, I'll say, well, here's what I'm sensing. Are those the words you would use, or are there better words to describe that for you? They love, like, oh, no, here's how I would say it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, more savvy therapists are going to be really excited and open that you're sharing that, because the majority of therapists want to be successful and they want to be helpful. So, you know, I think just to respectfully say, I know this may have worked for some other people, or I can sense, you know, you're really wanting to help me, but can I just give you some feedback? That particular technique isn't really jiving with me, you know. So, you know, like for me, just, you know, I don't do anything. I don't ask my clients to do anything I don't try myself, you know. And so there was a particular, you know, tool that a therapist used with me that really just didn't work. I don't know if I want to get into great detail with it, but anyway, it was just, it had to do with eye movements, but it had to do with some lights and stuff, and it was just really distracting. Now, being a therapist, I felt comfortable saying, you know, I know this may have worked for some people, but those lights are really just distracting me more than anything else. I don't think this is going to work for me. And she was like, oh, okay. But the problem is you might have a therapist that isn't that savvy, that thinks you're being resistant, quote unquote. If you are with someone like that, then I think don't take it personally. Just get that, okay, they're not realizing that they need to adapt this to personal preferences a little bit better. And I can try to see if we can work this out, and if not, maybe this just isn't the right fit. And I'll tell you honestly, as a therapist, people may not jive with what I'm doing. I mean, even when I'm trying to be adaptive, they might just think my personality is too silly or something. I would so much rather them tell me that, you know, I know you may help a lot of people, but I don't think this is right for me. I would much rather them tell me that and let me figure out who to refer them to instead, because I don't want them to have a bad experience.
I'm so glad that you said that, because so often we think we're locked in, and I had the same issues with eye movement exercises, and although we weren't using lights, this was back in the 90s before the lights were around. Uh-huh. I don't know, but and I flat out said to my therapist, okay, we won't be doing that again. I was uncomfortable during the whole process, and for 3 days afterward, I was a mess. And I thought, you know what? There's got to be a better way than this. So you're right. When we speak up and we're working with the right person, there's an easy, flexible, adaptive creativity. And if there isn't, that may be a sign that we're not working with the right person, and we may as well know that, because on both sides, we do our best work when we're collaborative and in rapport, rather than we're jiving against each other.
Exactly.
So let's talk about, my guest is the therapeutic aha expert, author Courtney Armstrong. The Therapeutic Aha, 10 Strategies for Getting Your Clients Unstuck is her new book. You can find it now in bookstores everywhere, as well as all the usual suspects for online purchasing. Courtney, you also have a website, so why don't you share that with us right now, and then we'll go back to our conversation.
Okay. I have a website for clients and survivors. Is CourtneyArmstrongLPC.com, and those resources, you know, are more targeted to people who are trying to overcome something, and give you some practical tools and tips. And then I have a site, CourtneyArmstrong.net, that's more targeted to therapists who are looking for training. And there's some overlap between the two, of course, but they're just a little bit different. So.
And what I really love is that you come at everything from an understanding of both sides, which in my experience has been rare, but creates really the optimal entry point for recovery. So let's get back to talking about the therapeutic aha, and one of the points that you make in the book, which is that events haunt us, but there's actually a bigger reason why we can't just get over it. What is that bigger reason?
It's the meaning that we attach to an event, and that is more disturbing, I think, for people than what actually happened. So let me give you when I was in graduate school, the thing that really stuck in my mind, because I've been through a traumatic experience myself, and but it said trauma changes the way you think about yourself, other people, and the world. And those are the things that you need to assist clients in, you know, exploring and understanding.